Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Constitutionalists, where you have two hosts every single Tuesday night, and one of them being the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party, Travis Johnson, Travis Bull Johnson, and then, of course, myself, Jeremy Johnson, no relation. He's a better-looking one. He always teases me about that, but I sit on the executive board at large for the Constitutional Republic Party. So we take Tuesday nights to discuss the Constitution with you. Now, before we get too far in this, let me just say hi to Travis and ask Travis how you been, my friend, and I know that you've been busy.
Yeah, we're doing okay. Just been working out on the farm, just building some pig shelters and stuff like that today. So it's, I mean, when you're farming and you're raising livestock, especially when the weather's manageable, you try to get as much done as you can.
And yet still take the time out of your busy schedule to try to inform the public of what their constitutional rights are every Tuesday night. As well as myself, I drive truck over the road, so I get, I'm driving right now, but that's the way it goes. We don't mind. It's we like to do that. It gives you a chance to see what we're all about, right?
Right, and well, and you got to give remind people what's at stake. I mean, these especially the first 10 on the Bill of Rights. I mean, this is there to protect us. But it's like anything else. If you don't watch out, then you end up losing those protections, because it's like anything else. If you don't use it, you lose it. So if you don't protect it, it gets whittled away a little bit at a time.
And pretty soon, before you know it, it's gone, and you ask yourself, well, I thought that was protected under the Constitution. Well, because you didn't stand up and say anything, they took that away without you even know about it. And that's kind of what's going on right now. They're whittling away at it, and that's why you got guys like me and Travis and everybody over at the Constitutional Republic Party and people that we're involved with, that's why we stand. That's why we try to do the things we do to help inform the public that we have to preserve the Constitution at all costs. So with that being said, let me, and if I get a little noisy here, I apologize. I'm still driving down the road, and it might get a little noisy. Let me start off, though, before we get into what the Eighth Amendment is, letting you know what our guest call-in number is. If you're listening online and you want to call in, you want to share your thoughts and your opinion, and it doesn't necessarily have to be about the Eighth Amendment. I would appreciate it if you'd keep it the Eighth, or the First through the Eighth, since we're talking about the Eighth tonight. And every time, you know, every week that goes by, sure, we can talk about any of them. The ones that we've discussed anyway. That way we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. But anyway, that phone number, the guest call-in number is 516-387-1733. And I'll say it one more time in 2 seconds here. If you do get through and you hear us over your headset or over your phone, just press the number 1. That way it gives me the notification on my switchboard that you want to come live on air with me and Travis Bull Johnson. Again, that phone number is 516-387-1733. And again, make sure you press the number 1 when you get through. So let's get right off to it, and let's have a discussion about the Eighth Amendment. So the Eighth Amendment, it says, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. It's a pretty basic, it's not too complicated. You know, people ask what's, you know, cruel and unusual punishment. Well, you know, the punishment has to fit the crime. I mean, should a guy get the death penalty because he stole his neighbor's lawnmower? You know, that would be an example of cruel and unusual punishment. But I think there's a lot of other examples throughout history where, you know, cruel and unusual punishment, there was a fight about it. I do believe, wasn't hanging one of them, Travis, and wasn't, oh, there's been a couple of them through the years. I know the firing squad had that kind of went away, but I don't remember if they really challenged that. Do you remember right off the top of your head?
Actually, the firing squad is still an option in Utah.
Well,
just about all of the death penalties have been challenged in one form or the other as saying, is it cruel and unusual? Especially now with all of the drug cocktails that the different drug companies were pulling away and not allowing them to be used in lethal injection. So now it's just basically anytime they're trying to do a lethal injection, it's a experiment. They haven't really done it that way before, so does it work? There's a couple states, actually, who are about to do a brand new form of the death penalty, and that's basically similar to a gas chamber, except they're just going to put pure nitrogen in there. Because you can breathe nitrogen, it just basically replaces all the oxygen, and the thought process is that you'll just go to sleep. Whether that's going to work or not, I don't know.
Who's going to be the guinea pig?
I believe Alabama is going to be one of the first ones who are looking to try it.
Well, that'll be an interesting. We'll see how that works. You know, there's. I was reading some examples of cruel and unusual punishment also. And so the Eighth Amendment gives everybody equal rights, including prisoners. Okay, so if you are incarcerated and you're being raped and sexually assaulted, I thought about this, and I got a question for you here in a second, Bull, but I thought about this. So cruel and unusual punishment would be incarcerated and allowing sexual assault and rape to take place. Well, in the state of Washington, I believe, they started allowing transgender, you know, men that transition to women, but they're not completely transitioned. They still have their male parts. Let them move into the women's prisons. And they started having issues with the women there getting sexually assaulted, raped, and in some cases impregnated. Would they be able to challenge that in court, that their Eighth Amendment rights are being violated by allowing essentially a biological male to share their living quarters with them while they're incarcerated?
I don't know. I think a lot of it would depend on just exactly what actions are they doing to prevent it. But yeah, that's an excellent question. I would need to think a little bit more about it.
And the reason I ask you that, not to put you on the spot, but I wanted to ask you that so the audience thinks about that also. I want you all to think, not take what we're saying as gospel. Just listen to what we're saying, maybe ask some questions about it, and think about it a little bit. And maybe there is a question there of a violation of rights, according to our Eighth Amendment in the Constitution, for prisoners. And that includes, you know, medical care, too. If they're not getting the medical care that's required, that also falls under the Eighth Amendment of cruel and unusual punishment.
Yep.
And another part of that is cashless bail or an excessive bail. And, you know, here's something I want people to think about, and I'm going to ask Bull another question, not to put him on the spot, but make sure that people are thinking about what this question is. Were the Democrats right that in certain instances that people that get charged with a crime should be afforded cashless bail? And they're doing it in New York State, but they're doing it with very violent criminals. And I know for one example, the guy got out, his ex had a restraining order on him. He found her in the street walking her baby with a stroller, and he executed her in the head right after he got out on cashless bail. Mm-hmm. So I do know there is that example. But my question to Bull is, were the Democrats right or are the Democrats right when they push for this cashless bail in circumstances?
Well, it's an interesting topic. I don't know if they're right or if they're not right, because I will just emphasize the fact that just because you're arrested, you have not been found guilty of anything. They suspect you did it. They think you did it. But according to the law, you are still innocent because you have not been proven guilty. So if you're a somebody without very much financial needs, with financial means, even if it's only considered $1,000 bail, that's considered relatively low. But if you're homeless, isn't that excessive? There's no way you could do $1,000, and you're stuck in jail waiting for trial while you have not been found guilty of anything. So I would counter in a case like that. I mean, what is acceptable? What is a respectable or a good amount of bail to encourage somebody shows up, but at the same time allow somebody the opportunity to make it? Because again, until they're proven guilty, they're supposed to be treated as if they're innocent. And keeping sitting innocent people in jail with bail that there's no chance that they can ever come up with is not right either. So where is your line? What is acceptable?
Innocent until proven guilty. So
prosecutors intentionally do this. Why? Because if they stick them in jail with a bail they can't afford, they are more likely to plead guilty to something they may not have even done just to get out. And then the prosecutor doesn't have to worry about prosecuting it. It's a tool that prosecutors use to try to get people to plead guilty, because they can keep them in there. They have no means of making bail. So when you I mean, we see prosecutors do this all the time. So how else would you counter that prosecution doing that, except with the cashless bail? That's why I don't know if it's right or it's wrong what the Democrats are doing. I mean, you're always going to hear about the cases that, like you mentioned, where he was suspected of something violent and then he went out and killed somebody. But without knowing, hey, what's the percentage of people who actually do that compared to the number, I'd be more interested to see how many of them got out on cashless bail and then were found innocent at trial. That's what I'd really like to know.
How many got out on cashless bail and went and committed another crime immediately? Both of those statistics
right.
would be a very interesting statistic to find out.
I mean,
I think you could gauge whether or not that cashless bail is actually working or not, you know?
Right. I mean, I have no issue with the state trying that to see if it works, but we need to see real numbers to be able to make that determination of, is this a good policy or is this a bad policy? Because we're always going to hear about the onesies and twosies who do, like you mentioned. But the question is, if 10,000 people got out and you had one person do that, is it worth getting rid of it? Because of that one person, when maybe 9,999 didn't go back out and commit a crime, and maybe 40% of those people were found innocent to begin with.
I would have to say that they should look at it on a case-to-case basis. Now, if somebody is arrested for especially like a violent crime or a crime of, you know, domestic assault or something on that level, if this is a convicted, like, multiple times convicted domestic abuser or
yep.
A violent criminal, then the cash bail is probably a no-go. You know, because the chances are higher that he's going to go out and reoffend if you let him just get out and walk.
Yeah. And what I would like to know, and I don't know this, maybe we have a lawyer out there who's listening to us who could call in and give us the answer to this question, or better yet, a judge. But when a judge is deciding whether to grant bail or whether to do cashless bail or anything like that, do they have access to what the evidence is so they can kind of keep that in mind when they're determining a bail? If they can see that the evidence is weak, more likely they're going to get, can they go ahead and more likely give them cashless bail, where if you're looking at it and you have like three eyewitnesses, well, there's a pretty damn good chance they did it. Whether that can be utilized when they make that decision, I don't know if it is, they can or they can't. I mean, I'm hoping they would. I'm hoping that would be part of the equation. But my other concern when we start talking about excessive bail. So, take me or take you. Say either of us was accused of a crime, we're arrested, and they give us $50,000 bail, which is substantial, but it's not. But is there a chance me or you could come up?
Oh, I think we lost Bull there. Are you still there, Bull?
Yeah, he is. The thing is he must be on his phone and the car took over.
Is what?
The car, I turned the car on and I think I took over his Bluetooth.
Oh. Well, we'll get Bull back here in a second, ladies and gentlemen. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for Bull to come back on, let me I want to tell you guys something about...
I believe his bail was $200,000.
Oh, you're on now. Hey, Bull, you got cut off. She turned the car on, and it transferred over.
Yeah, and it just went back over. I sent him a message to turn his Bluetooth off, but give me a second, and it should go right back.
Okay. Yeah, Bull's going to have to come back on and explain that again. But while we're waiting for him to get his headset back on, I wanted to tell you about a Supreme Court case that involved Austin versus the United States. It happened in South Dakota in 1993, and he was basically saying that the government, they took his mobile home and his auto body shop because he was accused of was a possession of cocaine, 2 grams, and was also accused of distribution of cocaine. Well,
what's your
the
thought?
Reason that they, well, they decided that they can take his property, the federal government did, because he took the 2 grams of cocaine and he brought it to his auto body shop in order to facilitate distribution. So it fell into, I can't remember the exact term they call it, and the Supreme Court or the local court, the state court, Supreme Court, agreed that they had that the federal government had a right, and then it went to appeals court, and they held that up. So he ended up losing his property, and he ended up getting a 7-year jail sentence, according to South Dakota state law. So, you know, in a civil court, that didn't hold up. Now, in other cases, I didn't get too far into the court cases involving that. I would have liked to. I just haven't had time. But I'm sure that you could find an example of where somebody won their Eighth Amendment case and they had a legit gripe, and it happens all the time. It goes both ways. So are you hooked back up now, Bull?
Yeah, when did you I was still talking. When did you lose me?
I don't know. You, like, right, almost right away when you started explaining some story you were going to tell, almost, like almost instantly. So
damn,
if you want to go back and tell that story, whatever story you were telling.
Well, again,
because we were talking about cashless
bike,
bail and stuff.
Okay. So what I was saying with the cashless bail is I got to remember
where
I was.
Where you were going with it. You were going to the
excessive bail
part of it.
Yeah, we were talking about excessive bail. And what is excessive bail? I was kind of talking about the fact that, say, me or you were arrested for some reason. And they hit us for a $20,000 bail. I don't have 20 grand laying around. I'm sure you probably don't either. What we would end up doing is probably spending $2,000 to a bail bond for them to make our bail for us. But basically, we lose that money. So it is the equivalent of a fine just for us to get out until our trial date or until they decide what to do with us. And our other option is we sit there in jail. I mean, is that right? Is that right that we end up having to pay the equivalent of a fine and we haven't even made it to court yet just so we don't sit in jail for 4 or 5 months waiting for a court date?
Your constitutional rights of a speedy trial.
Yeah, and now you take another example, say Donald Trump. Donald Trump's bail was $200,000 in Georgia. Now, for Donald Trump, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of money for me and you, but how much is it for Donald Trump? Is it really something that will bother him if $200,000 gets tied up for 6 months until a trial date for him? Is that any kind of real deterrent for him? Compared to everybody else that was arrested on that same day, including one gentleman they basically refused bail to. He's still sitting in jail. He wasn't even given the option of bail, and I'm forgetting what reasoning they used. But if you take any of those people who are being charged, I mean, there's quite a few of them on there that have the means to skip the country if they chose to, if their freedom was worth that much money. So what is a fair amount for their bail? Should bail be computed on an individual's net worth or the amount of money that they have currently available? Should it be a percentage based on what type of crime you were arrested for or a criminal record? I mean, there's got to be some way to do this that is more equitable and fair, but still treats people as if they're innocent until proven guilty. So I understand what they're aiming for in New York City. I mean, I firmly believe we do need some type of bail reform. Because even a $500 bail, if you don't have a penny to your name and you're homeless, is excessive. I mean, think about it. If you're homeless out on the street, any bail is impossible for you to make. So should they be required to sit in jail on my dime and your dime, housing and feeding them until their trial date, when they haven't even been convicted of anything?
Well, and there were cases to do, Bull, because there were, I'm sorry, that we have a, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if it sounds like we're trying to interrupt each other when we're speaking, I can assure you that we're not. There's like a 1.5 or 2 second delay. It's a small delay, but it's just enough to cause it sounds like Bull is done talking. He's actually been done talking for about a second or two. So I think he's done talking, so I think I can jump in. Well, then he'd already started his next sentence, and it sounds like I'm trying to interrupt him or vice versa, and that's not the case. It's just the Blog Talk Radio program that we use, and it's kind of a pain in the butt. Just bear with us, and we'll get through it. It just sometimes it sounds like we're trying to interrupt each other where we're not. But no, you're right, Bull. That you know the cashless bail and the excessive bail with the homeless person. What I was going to say is I have heard instances where a homeless person will go out and commit a crime because he's hungry and wants shelter. It's cold
yep.
out or whatever, just so he gets arrested and he's got
yep.
basically three meals, you know, and a bed to sleep on.
Yeah, that's just heartbreaking to hear that people would rather do that. But it's, you know what, we see it every day. We see people not necessarily do that same exact thing, but we see people every day give up their freedom, to give up their rights for a little bit of security. And that's basically what those guys are doing. They're committing a crime, giving up their freedom and their rights to have the security of a place to stay and a meal. And a country as great as ours, that the fact that we have people doing that is a whole different topic for a whole different type of show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we maybe, and maybe that's something that we can get into maybe on one of my Thursday night show. You can call in and we can get into a different discussion other than the Constitution, but more of a current events kind of issues, problems that we're facing as a country with, you know, the system that's been created. You know, the common man loses all of his rights while the rich and elite basically go out and do whatever they want to do. And we're the ones that got to pay the piper. They don't. They seem to get away with quite a bit of stuff. But that's a whole different topic, like Bull said, for a different, you know, maybe on our Thursday night show. Like, if that's uncensored, we kind of keep this one tame just because some people that are following along with the Constitutional Republic Party, this is what, you know, I wanted the chair to be on here, and we'll have some of the other members come on here on occasion, and so you can hear what we're all about. And, you know, even on Thursday night, no, that's my own radio show that I've been doing long before I joined the Constitutional Republic Party, and I'm a little bit more raw on there, and I certainly don't represent the thoughts or, you know, the direction of the Constitutional Party. It's more of me getting on there, sharing my opinions, not necessarily anything other than that. But I want people to understand something, too. We are now, this show, The Constitutionalist, all eight episodes, the eighth one will be up here probably in a day or two, but the previous seven ones are on Spotify. If that's easier for you to listen to, rather than this platform, you know, I know some people don't like this, but so you can go to Spotify, and if you go to Spotify, all you have to do is look up the Disrespected Trucker radio show, and that will have every single one of our episodes from the Constitutionalists, and then it will also have all of my episodes from the Disrespected Trucker, Not the View. We have a different nights, different people come on the network that I have for now, and we allow different people to share their thoughts and their opinions about a lot of different things. And me and Bull took the opportunity to take Tuesday nights and share with our followers of the Constitutional Republic Party a reminder of what your rights are according to the Constitution. So I just wanted everybody to be aware that that is an option if you like the Spotify platform a little bit better. Also, those of you that are listening over the internet right now and you want to call in, you know, we've said something about, you know, the Eighth Amendment or any of the other previous shows, you can call in, and we have a guest call-in number. You can speak to Bull or myself live, uncensored. Of course, we on this show, we like to keep it, you know, a little bit tame. We don't need to be on here throwing the F-bomb around and all that stuff. I mean, if you slip the, you know, a swear word, I'm not going to say nothing. Just we want you to be able to share your honest opinion and thoughts. But that phone number, if you'd like to call in, and you can write this down. This is the same phone number every single week. Put it in your phone. And that phone number is 516-387-1733. And once you get through to our switchboard, all you have to do is press the number 1. That allows me to see on the switchboard that you are calling in. I won't share your whole number, just your last 4 digits. I'll call on you, and we'll put you live on air, and you can ask any question you'd like to Bo or myself. And that phone number, again, if you want to put it in your phone, is 516-387-1733. And, again, you have to press the number 1. Otherwise, I think you're just on using your radio to listen to the or you're using your phone to listen to the radio show, which you can do that, too, if you'd like. That's no biggie to us. But so I just wanted people to be aware of that. So if you didn't catch us this time live and you're listening to a replay of this show, save that phone number. Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time when the Constitutionalist is on. It's good on Wednesday nights when Chris and Bikerson and Gibbs are on. Daryl Gibbs ran for lieutenant governor in Colorado. They've got a radio show on Wednesday nights, and Thursday nights I have one also that I do by myself called Not the View. And that phone number works for any of those radio shows. Wednesday and Thursday, or Wednesday nights is 7 p.m. Central Time, and Thursday nights is also 6 p.m. Central Time. So just save that phone number in your phone and just put it radio show, and then you know you can call in when we're live on air and join in the conversation. We've had, Senator Nathan Wessenberg called in one night. We have callers on occasion, not every night, but some nights. So I want people just to be aware of that before we continue. I know I had to take that break for a second and let you guys know that. But anyway, what else would you to add about the Eighth Amendment, Travis?
Well, I'm curious to see what your opinion is on the cashless bail.
Like I said earlier, I think it should be on a case-to-case basis, honestly.
Yeah.
If it's a first time or even a second time or a third time, a different crime offender, you know, and it's been spread out over 3 or 4 years that last time they got in a little bit of trouble or something, you maybe have a little bit of, what do you want to call it, empathy, sympathy, whatever you want to call it, and say, okay, it's been 3 years since this guy's gotten in any trouble. It's not the same crime he's accused of committing. It's not violent. It's not armed robbery. It's not, theft of a car or something like that. Yeah, then I can see cashless bail being, it's not a flight risk. Okay.
Well, and I think a prime example of this where cashless bail should be used is minor drug possession.
Well, now let me just add something to that, just that charge alone. Because now you see, like, Minnesota legalizing, I believe, up to 2 grams of marijuana. And how many people did you know through your life, whether you were friends with them or not friends with them, got busted for a small amount or paraphernalia, and they went through the rigmarole, through the process, our legal process, and it really screwed their lives up because they use marijuana. Yeah, I've always been a proponent of legalizing marijuana just because I see people with a lot worse problems that drink alcohol than I do with people that smoke a little bit of marijuana. And if they're not bothering me with it, why do I care? That's just my thoughts on the matter. And,
So let's switch gears a little bit, and let's talk about our great state of Minnesota and response to the George Floyd death, where you had all of these violent crimes, these riots and so forth taking place. And you basically had so many fundraisers out there just to automatically bail everybody out who was arrested.
Well, and let's not forget that the vice president herself, Kamala Harris, was encouraging, and I can't remember what the name of that fund was, but to donate to it. And they were letting these people out as soon as they were booked and processed, they were bailed out. And in a lot of, there are a couple of the cases I know that that person that was bailed out went out and committed an even worse crime.
Yep.
So, yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, let's get our thoughts on that and let the people that maybe want to follow along to a different political party say, and these guys talk a lot of common sense.
Because basically, that was the forerunner to cashless bail, because basically these people were arrested and basically came out with no money out of their own pocket for bail. It was somebody else basically paying it for them. So, I mean, that was basically the equivalent of cashless bail for them. It was, okay, here's your bail. Somebody paid it. Have a nice day. But the same question, how many of them that were released then went back and got rearrested? Or how many of them basically went back out and participated in the riots right after that? I mean,
I don't know what that number is either, but I would like to know that. That would be a very interesting number.
And that's what's frustrating, okay? I mean, I would love for Joe Blow Americans to be able to figure out what's working and what's not. We need actual facts. We need actual numbers. But the thing is, depending on who's in office and whose policies these are, we'll never see real numbers, because we're only going to see numbers that back up the feelings of those who are in office, because they're the ones who control the information. And that's one of my frustrations with both of these parties, is they both work that way. You never have a politician or a party who has a policy basically go back and do a serious look at this policy. Let's see, is this actually doing what we wanted it to? They don't ever do that, because that would mean occasionally they might have to admit they were wrong on something. So rather than do that, you never find out real facts and real numbers to be able to come up with a good policy decision.
Not to mention, Trav, that one party or the other will hide a pertinent information on studies or statistics to make it benefit whatever their position is on it. It happened with COVID. It happens with a lot of different things where they come in and they twist and turn the statistics and they add this or add that, and just to skew the numbers to push their agenda. And that's the problem with the two-party system. Nobody's standing up to it.
And unfortunately, I mean, this is an old joke of ours, is you know what the definition of statistics are? Lying with numbers. I mean, I made my living for a while as a finance guy in the military, and truth of the matter is, I can make numbers say just about anything I wanted it to say, depending on what I included or excluded. And I'll give you a prime example. Let's talk about my run for Congress. We got almost 6% of the vote in our election. Now, I could either go back and say, you know what, I had the second most successful third party run in the country in a contested race. Well, what does that mean? It basically means I had the second highest number in the country when there was a Republican and a Democrat running. But there were a lot of other third party candidates who had much higher numbers than I did, but they were only running against a single Republican or a single Democrat. But depending on whether we use the contested race makes all the difference in the world to what my numbers are actually saying. I mean, there is a libertarian, I want to say he had like 17 or 18% in this last election. Well, that's great. Except it was only him and a Democrat, I think, and or him and a Republican, and the opponent got 83%. But again, you could say, you know what, I had the best showing of a libertarian in the country. That sounds great. But again, it's all how you want to phrase your results. I mean, and
well, and let's address the fact, too, that people are still so brainwashed into believing, they've been convinced this through years and years and years of conditioning, that you,
yep.
if you don't vote for a Republican, you're giving the Democrats a vote. And the Democrats use the same playbook. If you don't vote for a Democrat,
yep.
you're giving the Republicans a vote. What happened to your freedom of choice? And people
yep.
don't understand that if you're not voting, if you're not voting your conscience, then you're still voting the lesser of two evils. The lesser of two evils is still evil.
Yeah. Well, and people have just gotten into this whole mindset of they just want to be right. So they only want to hear numbers, or they only look for numbers that back their point of view. Nobody really wants to look at things in an objective way anymore and say, hey, is this right or is this wrong? I mean, it goes into the whole thought process of critical thinking. We don't critical think anymore. We don't look for better answers. We look for something that makes us feel nice. We look for something that makes us feel right. Give me a number that justifies how I believe, and that's all I want. We don't really want the answers. We want something that will reassure us that our beliefs are correct. And people just don't know how to handle it anymore when they're not correct. They'd rather stick their head in a hole. And I think we see that with the two major parties. I mean, they just want to believe that they've not wasted their life supporting the wrong party. They don't really want to see what that party has become, because that's the party that they have believed for how long. There are so few people like you, Jeremy, who used to be a member of a party and then woke up and say, wait a minute, this is not the best idea. I mean,
yeah,
I realized
that that party wasn't. I didn't share their views any longer. They were not following the Constitution, and I believe in the Constitution wholeheartedly. And we could have debates about that all night long in certain instances. And I would always go back. You know what? Like the freedom of religion. I would always go back. You know, everybody said we got to bring God back in schools. Okay, that's fine. Then you have to allow the Muslims to pray in schools. Well, this is America. No, it's called freedom of religion. So if
yeah.
you allow, like, okay, I can give you an example. People want God in schools, so guess what? They started having after-school prayers. Well, guess what they started doing now? After school, and they have to allow them because fair is fair. Satan Club comes to schools.
Yep.
This is no joke because I've had them on my radio show. They come
yep.
to schools and have an after-school Satan Club. And
yep.
the parents are outraged over it. I said, well, listen, I'm a Christian. I believe in God, and I pray quite often. However, if you allow one thing in a public place where other people have to put up with your religion, then you have to put up with other people's religion. As much as I hate
yep.
saying that, especially involving the Satan Club, but fair is fair. And that's what the Constitution was to protect everybody, not just one group, but everybody had equal rights.
It's funny you mentioned that, because did you happen to see what what is the name of the it's a Satanic Temple put out the other day? I guess there was this meme going out that they believe that they thought that the only reason the Satanic Temple was for the tax break, to be tax free. And they actually put something out going, no, that's not true, because we actually do pay our taxes. We don't claim a religious exemption. We don't think any religion should. And I just thought that was kind of interesting that somebody tried to throw that on them, and then that was their response afterwards, going, hey, no, we actually pay our taxes.
That is interesting. Yeah, I've had them on my radio show, and I don't like what they do. I think it's evil. But again, when you open up a can of worms, be careful what kind of can of worms you're opening up, because this is what will happen. And fair is fair, and equal protection for all. That means all. And I'm not trying to be a broken record here and keep on playing, but that's what it means. And some of the things that means it's going to be uncomfortable for you. But that's why we have to be very careful with the avenues we travel.
Yep. Now, we talked a lot about the bail and the bail reform and stuff like that, but really we touched just a little bit on cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, at the beginning we just touched a little bit.
Yeah, we touched on it just a little bit, but I mean, this is where my issue is with the Eighth Amendment. It is worded in such a way that it leaves so much open for personal judgment. So it says, okay, you know, cruel and unusual punishment is forbidden, but it doesn't really say or highlight what is considered cruel and unusual punishment. Would any kind of punishment other than jail time now not be seen as unusual? So if you tried to change anything with the justice system and tried to come up with another way for somebody to be punished other than jail and incarceration, would that be legal under the Eighth Amendment, or would that be considered unusual? Or does it have to be cruel and unusual? It has to be both.
My personal opinion, now that marijuana is legal in a lot of states, wasn't it, looking back now, making hindsight 2020, wasn't it cruel and unusual punishment to sentence somebody to 15, 20 years in prison, good maybe a quarter or a third of their life, because they possess marijuana? I mean, one can make that argument. You know, I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just looking at it from a different standpoint. I mean, could we go back and say that was cruel and unusual?
Yeah. And let's open another whole can of worms here on the piggyback of something that we're going to be doing in a few months. When you're talking about people who are found guilty of abusing children, sexually abusing children, when it comes down to punishing them, what really is cruel and unusual? I mean, I can come up with a lot of things that I don't really consider it cruel compared to what they put these kids through. I mean, right off the top of my head, I just want to go wood chipper goes through it. Like a friend of mine used to say. I mean, what is your thoughts on punishing people for guilty of abusing kids? And they're like, wood chipper, feet first, low gear. I mean, because these are the people who are.
I want people to think about something, and it sounds mean, but here's the thing. When somebody molests a child, especially when it's a child's out of age, when they can remember thoughts and how it made them feel and, you know, the sensations that they felt while it was happening, and they have to go through the rest of their lives in counseling, they have relationship problems, some of them have substance abuse problems, they literally destroyed these children for their life, in some sense. And what would, talking about cruel and unusual punishment, why would it be cruel and unusual to ruin that person's life? Because they just did it to somebody else. So why is there so much sympathy for somebody that does this to children, traffics children, abuses children, in some cases abuses their own children. It's just like a child's a child, no matter what. Anybody that does that is they're sick, in my opinion. And I don't want to get too heated here because then I start going off on the rails. But yeah. You think of like times when they like touch a baby. You know, obviously a baby cannot remember that. So, but they're going to find out about it. They're going to have emotional issues because of that, because of some creep that decided that he's got to fulfill his sexual whatever the hell it is. And yeah. I think it's disgusting. But, again, and it's another good thought for you all to think about. What is cruel and unusual in that situation?
Now, but let's turn the tables now. And let's say that person ended up being innocent.
And that's happened.
And,
because there have been children that they wouldn't get a candy bar at Kmart, and they accused their stepfather of sexual abuse. And then guess what?
And,
it ruined that guy's life.
Yeah. And you subjected these people to the worst punishment you could think of because they harmed a kid, and then it turns out they didn't. Those are, in my mind, that is part of the reason for those limitations set by the Eighth Amendment. Although we'd all love to say wood chipper, feet first, low gear, those amendments are there to protect us, because sometimes things are not the way they seem. Sometimes you may have a crooked prosecutor who's got an axe to grind with somebody. So the Constitution and these rights are kind of like our guardrails to help protect us from situations like that. And I know I kind of flipped y'all around there, coming out saying one thing and then coming back with the with this other mindset on it. But that's what makes our Constitution so important. That's why we don't have exceptions for what we consider the worst of the worst. That's why there's not something different there, because let's face it, government screws up on occasion. And we need all of the safeties we can get to protect us from government screwing up.
There, you know, I was just thinking of a case I just seen. I think it was actually on Judge Judy, of all places I've seen this, a clip of it. A clip of a guy was in court to find out a paternity test, to find out if he was a father of this woman's child. Well, Judge Judy says to him, so you spent 5 years in prison because you didn't pay child support. He goes, yes, ma'am, I did. And he kind of had tears in his eyes, and Judge Judy says, okay, let's just get to it. And she says, whatever his name was, we'll call him Ron. Ron, you are not the father. And he just put his head down. He goes, 5 years of prison. And Judge Judy looks at him or her and says, but you know the father. And the lady says, yeah, and I still talk to him. And the guy goes, she should be charged with some kind of a crime. And she goes, why? I've done nothing wrong. And I'm like, you just let a guy sit in prison for 5 years because you wanted child support
and
baby's daddy was too lazy.
Yeah.
You know, and he wasn't the father. I mean, come on. Where's the, you know, what happens with that? You know, should she be charged with a crime? Does our Constitution protect victims in that manner?
Should she be responsible for paying him for his 5 years he was in jail from what he would have got working?
There goes your support, reverse support.
Yeah.
You let a guy, innocent man, go to prison. You knew that he wasn't the father. You knew he didn't owe you child support, but you weren't getting it from somewhere else, so you allowed it to happen. I think that was really, when I see that, I was disgusted. That is disgusting.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
so,
I think we, what's that?
Oh, no, that just kind of tells us why it's so important to protect those constitutional rights. And even when we start talking about, because let's face it, we all have a knee-jerk reaction when we hear about cashless bail. They're just letting criminals back on the street. But we got to remember why these Bill of Rights are here, what it's meant to do. And I get a kick out of this all the time, especially as when we talk about bail reform, and because the Republicans are often seen or see themselves as the defenders of the Constitution. Yet they're the same ones who want Christianity to be the religion of the country. They're the same ones who want high bails for crimes when people aren't even found guilty of a crime yet. They're the law and order group, but law and order, to a certain extent, the way they see it, is against so much of the practices of our Constitution that they, in their mind, think they're the champions of. That is part of the reason we started this new party, to bring us back to that being a champion of these rights, even if we don't like them. Even if we want to say the Eighth Amendment should be suspended for child molesters, we got to remember that it's there to protect us, and that includes when we don't necessarily agree with something, but there's a reason for it. And that reason is because, as we all know, either the government either screws up, or you have people in government with power who should not have that power, because they will then use government to even scores. And I think we hear stories about this with different prosecutors. I mean, a mutual friend of ours has had this problem in his county often, because he has an issue with one of the officers of the prosecutor, and they do everything they can to go after him. It's so important that for us to defend all of these rights from the Constitution, no matter what. And that's kind of what we're hoping to do with this, with that Constitutional Republic Party, is bring that back.
And that's what we're working diligently on. And we have a lot of great people involved in the Constitutional Republic Party, different ideas, great ideas. But the one idea that we all agree upon is that we need to protect our Constitution at all costs. And just like Bowles said, even some of the things that we dislike, it's there to protect all of us. In case you're accused falsely, you still have that Constitution to fall back on to hopefully that it works, and it works the way it's supposed to. Because there are people out there that get on the wrong side of the system. And we know a guy that got on the wrong side of the system because he had a personal disagreement with an officer of the law. And, yeah, he's told me some of the, you know, the ins and outs of the case. And I'm like, holy shit, how did you get a fair trial with a former police officer sitting on the jury? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were some things on there that in there I'm just like, yeah, that's not what this whole system was created for. It was to make sure that you got a fair and impartial jury trial by your peers. So, but no, we're going to have a lot more of these discussions. And some nights it's going to be where we get on and we go right through that amendment. They're not complicated. They're pretty straightforward, simple, and we'll give you some examples, and then, you know, we'll go on to a different conversation about the Constitutional Republic Party and maybe revisit some of the other, you know, a news story popped up, and we can give you an example of a violation of the First Amendment or a violation of the Fourth Amendment, you know, something like that. We'll discuss current events when we see a violation of somebody's constitutional rights and what, you know, what stance does the Constitutional Republic Party What do they take on that matter? So unless you got anything else, Bo, we can end this episode and call her a night. I don't think we have any callers on waiting to chew our ear out. So if you're good, we'll end it.
I'm good, man.
All right. Well, I want to say before we go, thank you guys for listening to the Constitutionalist number 8, the 8th Amendment. And we look forward to you joining us next week as we talk and discuss about the 9th Amendment. And please share us out with your friends and let people know. They can find us on Spotify under the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And it'll be named The Constitutionalist. All of our episodes are up there. You can go back and re-listen anytime you want. They're all recorded. And again, the phone number is 516-387-1733. Press the number 1 when you get through. You can come on live on air and ask the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party, Travis Bull Johnson, any of your questions live. And with that being said, thank you again for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week on The Constitutionalist number 9.